Right now, as you listen to this, there are literally millions of articles being uploaded to the internet.
Oh, yeah. Millions. Just a constant flood.
A total flood.
Yeah.
And, by tomorrow morning, like 99% of them will have completely vanished into the digital void.
Just gone. Nobody reads them.
Exactly. They won't get a single click, a single share, or a single meaningful read. So, welcome to the Pitcot Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Pitcot.
And I'm your co-host, Annabelle Pitcot. And today we are going to unpack exactly what makes the top 1% of digital writing just absolutely impossible to ignore.
We absolutely are. And I am so excited because today's deep dive is sourced directly from Pitcot.
Yes, the best material.
Specifically from the best-selling ebooks on our ebook store. The insights in these pages, I mean, they fundamentally rewrite the rules of how we connect online.
They really do. It's game-changing stuff.
So you need to visit www.pitcot.com/books to download them. Seriously, get them in your toolkit right now.
100%. You won't regret it.
And while you're at it, subscribe to our channel if you haven't. Activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating. We appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating to propel this podcast to help others too.
Yeah, that helps us out so much. And it is so crucial to get these foundations right, you know? Because the internet is an unimaginably loud
Oh,
place.
it's deafening.
Right. And the single biggest trap that writers fall into is writing for algorithms instead of actual human beings.
Okay, let's unpack this right away,
Yeah.
because that is a massive shift in perspective.
It really is.
The source material emphasizes that a compelling article isn't just like a container for perfectly optimized keywords. It's an engine for human connection.
A human connection, exactly.
But let me push back a little here because, well, we all know search engine optimization matters.
Oh, for sure. SEO is important.
So if we completely ignore the algorithm,
Mm.
how does anyone actually find the work in the first place?
Okay, so that is a highly valid question. Think of the algorithm as like the map.
Okay, the map.
Right, but human psychology is the actual destination. You can optimize a piece perfectly to get a reader to click.
Right, you get the click.
But if the content reads like a robot wrote it, just to, satisfy some search crawler, that reader is going to bounce in 3 seconds.
Oh, yeah, I do that all the time. If it feels robotic, I'm out.
Exactly. And ironically, the algorithm notices that fast bounce rate and punishes your ranking anyway.
Wow, so you shoot yourself in the foot by trying to game the system.
Precisely because, and I love this line from the Pitcot ebooks, algorithms don't have credit cards.
Haha, I love that distinction so much. Algorithms don't have credit cards.
Right. They don't subscribe to newsletters. They don't feel loyalty. The absolute best writers out there spend vastly more time thinking about the psychology of their reader than they do about their topic.
So what does it actually mean to obsess over the reader's psychology, like practically speaking?
Well, it means sitting down and asking yourself some deeply uncomfortable questions about your audience.
Like what kind of questions?
Like, what keeps them awake at night, staring at the ceiling? What specific friction are they experiencing in their daily lives?
Ah, okay. Finding the pain point.
Right. Think about walking through a really loud, crowded market. You keep your head down to ignore the noise.
Yeah, you just want to get through it.
But if one vendor specifically calls out the exact hyper-specific problem you've been stressing about all morning, you stop cold.
You stop cold, yes.
Mm.
That is exactly what scrolling past 100 headlines feels like.
You only pause when a writer has perfectly mirrored your internal monologue.
Wow, mirrored your internal monologue.
Yeah.
That's powerful. And the Pitcot ebooks mentioned a golden rule for newsletters that builds on this perfectly.
Oh, the one problem rule.
Yes, they say you need to send a weekly email that solves exactly one problem, not five, not 10, just one.
Just one. Keep it laser focused.
Make it short. Make it immensely useful and make it read like a letter from a friend.
Yeah, and the mechanism behind why that one problem rule works is all about cognitive load.
Cognitive load. Break that down for me.
So when people open their inbox, they are already overwhelmed. Hundreds of unread emails. If you hand them a newsletter with 7 different topics, it feels like homework.
Ah, yes. Too much work.
So they close it. But if you promise to solve one specific point of friction, say, how to write a better email subject line, and you deliver on that promise in 3 minutes.
You just gave them a quick win.
Exactly. You gave them dopamine. And over time, providing those consistent, focused wins builds an unbreakable loyalty. Subscribers gave you their time, and you earn their trust with consistency, not tricks.
Okay, but wait, I have to challenge this.
Go for it.
If I have a really diverse audience with a lot of different interests, doesn't hyper-focusing on just one problem per email risk, like alienating the rest of my readers for that week?
That's what people worry about, yeah.
Right. So how do we know we're picking the right problem without just blindly guessing and hoping it hits?
That is the exact trap most writers fall into. They try to be everything to everyone, and they end up being nothing to anyone.
Oof. Being nothing to anyone. That hurts, but it's true.
It is. You avoid the guessing game through rigorous audience research. You don't just pick a problem out of thin air. You reverse engineer it from the data.
Reverse engineer it. Okay, how?
The Pitcot source advises diving deeply into forums like Reddit or Quora or even the comment sections of your competitors.
Oh, wow. Going straight to where they complain.
Exactly. But you aren't just looking at what topics they are discussing. You are looking for the emotional phrasing.
The emotional phrasing. Explain what that looks like in practice, because that sounds fascinating.
It really is. You are scanning for phrases like, I am so frustrated with, or why does it always happen when?
Or like, I've tried everything to fix.
Yes. That right there is the emotional friction. When you find a question that has a high level of frustration attached to it and no clear answer in the thread,
jackpot.
You have just found your guaranteed high converting topic. You aren't guessing anymore. You are stepping in as a highly targeted problem solver.
That makes total sense. You are basically panning for gold, and the gold is their frustration.
Uh-huh. That's a great way to look at it.
Well, before we dive into exactly how to stress test those topics once we find them, I need to remind you to visit www.pitcot.com.
Yes, definitely head over there.
Please subscribe to our channel if you haven't, and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads.
We have so much great content coming.
Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.
Awesome. So once you have identified that frustration we were talking about, you need to turn it into a topic that is irresistible.
Right. It can't just be boring.
No, exactly. The Pitcot source material actually compares choosing a topic to selecting the perfect bait for fishing. You need a specific trifecta.
Ooh, trifecta. What are the three parts?
Relevance, curiosity, and value.
Okay. Break that trifecta down for me. I mean, relevance seems obvious, but how does it interact with the other two?
So relevance gets you noticed. It means the topic actually matters to their current situation right now.
Okay, got it. What about value?
Value is the payoff. It's the actual actionable solution you provide at the end.
And curiosity.
Curiosity is the bridge between the two. It is the psychological gap between what the reader currently knows and what they suddenly realize they don't know.
Oh, wow. The gap. So if you just state a fact, there's no gap.
Right. There is no curiosity gap there. You have to frame your solution as a missing puzzle piece they desperately need to complete the big picture.
I see. And the source talks about blending trending topics with evergreen ones to capture that curiosity, right?
Yeah, you need a healthy mix of both.
Trending topics are like catching a massive wave of immediate attention. They get you that huge spike in traffic today.
But they fade fast.
Exactly. But evergreen topics, those are like the deep ocean currents. They answer fundamental questions that never go out of style.
And they bring you steady, compounding traffic for months and even years later.
But to make sure an evergreen topic actually has enough depth to sustain a reader's attention, the source introduces a phenomenal strategy.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
The so what test.
Yes.
Yeah.
The so what test. This is an incredible tool for cutting through superficial writing.
I love this one so much.
Yeah.
Every time you think you have a topic, you must ask yourself, so what? Three times in a row.
Three times. Not once, not twice. Three times.
I read that and instantly realized how many of my old articles would have totally failed that test.
Uh-huh. Oh, me too. So many weak ideas.
It's like having this ruthless editor sitting right on your shoulder.
Yeah.
Give us a concrete example of how this stress test actually works in real time.
Sure. Let's say your initial topic idea is how to write better.
Okay. A bit generic, but fine. You ask the first, so what?
Right. And you answer, well, so people can improve their articles.
Then you ask the second, so what?
So they can get more people to read their work.
Okay, getting closer. Then you ask the third, deeper, so what?
Because right now they feel like they are shouting into a void and nobody is listening, and they want to feel recognized as an authority in their field.
Boom. There it is.
Boom. Now you don't write an article called How to Write Better.
No way. Mm. You write an article called The One Writing Habit That Separates Amateurs from Recognized Authorities.
Wow. The difference between those two is staggering.
It really is. The first one is just a weak, easily ignorable statement. It's like a limp handshake.
Haha, a limp handshake, yes.
But the second one promises a hyper-specific, highly desirable transformation. It hits that core emotional wound we talked about earlier.
Absolutely. Specificity is the exact mechanism that converts a casual scroller into a dedicated reader. You have to be specific.
Okay, but once you use that specificity to get them to click, you have an entirely new problem to solve, don't you?
Oh, yeah. The game just started. You have to format the page so they don't immediately bounce.
We really need to talk about the psychology of eye tracking and formatting, because I feel like this is where most writers lose their audience entirely.
They absolutely do.
Because look, if I click on a brilliant, highly specific headline, but then I'm confronted with a massive, unbroken brick of dense text.
A giant wall of words.
Yes. That looks like a 19th century textbook.
How?
I am out. I just bounce. I don't care how good the advice is, the friction is just way too high.
Precisely. And let's look at the mechanics of how people actually consume digital content. When a user lands on a web page, they do not read left to right, line by line, like they would a physical novel.
They really don't.
Eye tracking studies consistently show that digital readers use what is called the F pattern.
The F pattern, okay.
Right, so they read the headline across the top, they drop down a bit and scan across a subhead, and then their eyes just shoot straight down the left margin.
They're just looking for anything that stands out.
Exactly. They are in a state of what the Pitcott source calls scroll hypnosis.
Scroll hypnosis. That is the perfect term for it. You just zone out and flick your thumb.
We all do it.
So how do we break them out of that trance and get them to actually read the words?
You have to build visual speed bumps.
Visual speed bumps.
That is what formatting actually is.
Mm.
Bolding key phrases, using bulleted lists, and breaking up sections with clear, punchy subheadings.
So they aren't just aesthetic choices.
No, not at all. They are structural anchors. When a reader is scanning down the left side of the page and hits a bolded bullet point, it physically arrests their eye movement.
Oh, it interrupts the scroll.
Exactly. It interrupts the scroll and forces their brain to actually engage with the text. Formatting is about managing the reader's cognitive load so they never feel lost or overwhelmed.
It's like handing someone a map. If you hand them a map with no road signs and no highlighted routes, they might know the final destination. But the absolute friction of trying to navigate it is going to make them quit halfway.
That is a brilliant analogy.
Which brings us to the concept of brevity. Because the Pitcott source is uncompromising on this. Brevity is not just about writing short articles. It is about precision.
That is such a critical distinction. Brevity is about word density, not just word count.
Word density. I love that.
Yeah. A 3,000-word article can feel incredibly brief and fast-paced if every single sentence pulls its weight.
Right. It flies by.
Conversely, a 300-word email can feel like a grueling slog if it's filled with passive voice and wandering thoughts.
We've all read those emails. They take forever to get through.
The rule is ruthless. If a sentence does not actively move the reader forward or deepen their understanding, you must delete it.
You're sculpting away everything that isn't the core message.
Exactly. And here's where it gets tricky. While you're being brief and precise, you also have to be entertaining.
Oh, man. That's a lot to juggle.
It is. But if we want them to finish the piece and actually hit that share button, we have to make them feel something.
Make them smile, maybe. But I have to ask, how do you balance dense, valuable information with entertainment without sounding like you're just writing fluff?
Well, the mechanism of entertainment in digital writing is actually rooted in surprise.
Surprise? How so?
When you are explaining a highly technical or dry concept, you have to balance that heavy data with unexpected storytelling or analogies. It's the concept of delight.
Delight happens when two completely unrelated concepts are suddenly connected in the reader's mind.
Yeah.
Precisely. The Pitcott material suggests using pop culture references, like movies, books, everyday scenarios.
Ah, I see.
If you can explain complex SEO mechanics using an analogy about ordering coffee at a chaotic cafe, the reader smiles.
Because it's relatable. They understand it faster.
They remember it longer, and crucially, they share it.
Because sharing is basically the reader saying to their network, look how smart and funny this article made me feel.
Exactly. It is free exponential marketing.
But the source also gives a very strict warning here. While we want to be entertaining, we must never copy another successful writer's voice. We have to be authentic.
Yes. The internet needs your original voice.
But I want to push back on this a little. Doesn't every writer learn by mimicking their heroes at first? How does someone actually isolate their own natural voice?
You're right that imitation is a natural part of the learning curve, but it's a phase you have to outgrow quickly.
Okay, so how do we outgrow it? The way you isolate your authentic voice is by paying attention to your natural conversational cadence.
Conversational cadence.
Right. If you write a draft and then you read it out loud and you find yourself stumbling over the words.
Or sounding like you're wearing an oversized suit.
Haha, exactly. Sounding unnatural. That isn't your voice. Your digital voice should just be a slightly sharper, more polished version of how you speak to a respected colleague over lunch.
Reading it out loud. That is the ultimate litmus test.
It never fails.
Because if I am naturally a blunt, direct speaker, but I try to write in a flowery, poetic style just because someone else is successful doing it, the reader's subconscious is going to pick up on that friction immediately.
Oh, 100%. They won't trust you.
Right. Familiarity breeds trust, and readers need to recognize your specific rhythm within two sentences.
And you find out if that specific rhythm is actually converting by leaning heavily into the data. In 2026, relying purely on intuition is a massive mistake. The Pitcott source outlines how to use tools like Google Search Console to refine your strategy.
And this is fascinating, because Search Console acts almost like a reverse engineer of the reader's brain.
It really does.
Let's break that down, because I feel like a lot of writers get deeply intimidated by data analytics. How does Search Console actually give us a window into the reader's mind?
Well, it allows you to intercept the internal monologue of your ideal reader right before they land on your page.
Wow. Intercept the monologue.
It shows you the exact long tail queries they typed into Google. Let's say you see people finding your site by searching how to write digital articles that actually convert.
Okay.
They aren't just casually browsing. That specific phrasing shows they are actively bleeding.
Actively bleeding. They have a wound.
Yes. They have a specific wound, low conversion rates, that you can now write a highly targeted article to bandage. The data tells you what to write, but your authentic voice dictates how you write it.
That is so empowering. You could literally see the unanswered questions your audience has and just hand them the solutions.
Exactly. It's almost unfair.
And then you can optimize those solutions using A/B testing.
Yeah.
I love the mechanics of A/B testing because it applies the rigorous scientific method to a creative art.
It really does. When you A/B test a headline, you aren't just throwing things at the wall, you are isolating variables.
Like testing two totally different psychological hooks.
Right. You take the exact same article, but you test a headline that uses a hard number against a headline that uses a provocative question.
And you just send both out to a small segment of your audience.
Yep. And the data tells you definitively which psychological trigger works best for your specific readers. You let the hard data inform your overarching strategy.
But, you know, even with the absolute best data, the perfect topic, and a solid understanding of the F pattern, the magic rarely happens on the very first try.
Almost never.
We have to talk about the rewrite. The Pitcott material brings up that famous Ernest Hemingway quote, "The first draft of anything is garbage."
And he was entirely right. Too many writers experience massive anxiety because their first draft is messy and chaotic.
They think it means they're a bad writer.
Exactly. But that is exactly what a first draft is supposed to be. The first draft is just you pouring the wet, raw concrete.
Oh, I love this analogy.
You cannot sculpt wet concrete. The actual art of writing is entirely in the rewriting once that raw material is finally on the page.
I get so genuinely excited thinking about it this way because it completely removes the pressure. You are just digging up chunks of clay.
That's all it is, just getting the clay on the table.
But to sculpt it properly, the source emphasizes the absolute necessity of distancing yourself.
Mm.
You have to put the draft away for at least 24 hours.
Yes, a full day.
Why is that specific time gap so psychologically important? Why can't I just edit it right away?
Because of how your brain caches information. When you just finish writing a piece, your brain is holding on to what you meant to write, not what you actually wrote.
Oh, wow. So you read what you intended to say.
Exactly. If you try to edit immediately, Your brain automatically fills in the gaps. It skips over clunky sentences and missing words because the intention is still fresh in your mind.
You are essentially blind to your own mistakes.
Completely blind. Putting it away for a full day flushes that mental cache.
Flushing the cache. I love that.
When you come back, you are reading it with the cold, objective eyes of a stranger. That distance is where true clarity lives.
And when you come back with those fresh eyes, that is when you do the read-aloud test we talked about. You walk around the room and physically speak the words.
It is the ultimate test.
If you run out of breath on a massive run-on sentence, you have to cut it. Because good writing has a beat. It has a rhythm.
It should feel completely, beautifully effortless for the reader to consume.
Even if it took you grueling hours of revision to create that illusion of effortlessness.
It is the willingness to do that grueling, unglamorous work of rewriting that separates the amateurs from the pros.
It really is.
When you read something that is perfectly polished, you trust the writer's authority immediately. That immense trust is earned through revision, deep empathy for the reader's time, and an unwavering commitment to clarity.
Wow. So when we pull all of these Pitcott strategies together, what does it mean?
It means irresistible digital writing is not magic.
No, it's not. It is a powerful, repeatable mechanism. It is combining the psychological empathy of solving one specific problem.
The rigorous stress testing of the so what rule.
The visual speed bumps of smart formatting.
And the scientific refinement of data and rewriting.
Can you imagine the impact on your life if every single piece you publish became an absolute must read?
It is entirely within reach, but it requires taking that first difficult step.
It does.
I want to leave you with a final provocative thought to ponder today. Think about your own writing journey right now.
Okay, think about it.
What if the one messy, uncomfortable, entirely imperfect first draft that you are actively avoiding writing today is the exact piece of raw material that eventually builds your undeniable authority in your niche?
Oh, wow. That is such a powerful reframe. Stop avoiding the wet concrete. Get out there and write that messy draft.
Do the work most people skip.
Thank you so much for exploring this with me. And to our listener, please visit www.pitcott.com.
Yes, go check it out.
Thank you for listening to the Pitcott Podcast. I will leave a link in the description below. Subscribe to our channel if you haven't, and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads.
We can't wait to share more with you.
Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. Thank you for being there with us, and don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating. Until next time, keep writing for people, not algorithms.